You're listening to Comics with Kenobi!
Execute Order 67. Episode 66. Geek me all knowing box set, stay open. May 4th, I'm hoping Luke gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore. And I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
You sound like you got a frog in your throat. I want to do something about that.
Maybe I could consult with Darth Plagueis the Wise.
Yes, Darth. Accent on the Plagueis.
Hello, how are you? Happy episode 66.
Happy episode 66. And it's fitting that we're discussing this because of the events of the Darth Vader comic that we're going to be discussing in a minute. We only have two books this week. And, of course, as soon as we start recording, the noise begins right outside my door. I swear I don't live in a demilitarized zone.
Oh, I thought that was your ride. I thought your ride was here.
No, not today. We have the Thrawn adaptation issue number 5, and we have Darth Vader number 17. Matt, do we have any news for the week?
Just a couple of quick hits. Very interesting thing. You may have heard about the new Star Wars video game that's being planned. I believe it's the Fallen Jedi.
I've not heard of this. What? Tell me about this.
It's just this new game. It's sort of gonna, it looks like, I think it's going to be a first-person shooter. Again, they're not making it for ColecoVision, so I won't be playing it.
Right.
I'm one of these days, I am going to have to break and get a PlayStation or something.
I'm amazed
or an
Jerry
Xbox.
Has not insisted on it.
It has become a near daily lobbying effort by both Jerry and Harper to get one of these devices. And I came close last week. I was at a GameStop getting a T-shirt for Jerry's birthday, a Pacific Rim T-shirt. And some guy brought in, like, I guess the special edition Sony PlayStation 4 Battlefront edition. And he was trading it in. I was like, might have to buy that, just because it says Star Wars. So it had, had the Inferno Squad logo on it. I was like, yeah, that's kind of cool. But apparently this game, it's a first-person shooter. It is set after, obviously, the Fall of the Jedi, conveniently enough, Order 66 for Episode 66. But Story Group guy Matt Martin had tweeted that apparently we might be seeing some hints as to what will be coming in the game in the pages of, fittingly enough, Darth Vader, Volume 2. So, obviously he was not much more descriptive than that, and that's fine. But I think that's kind of cool because, we're going to see, it's another chance to see how one media influences another, or, perhaps clues are laid, or even Easter eggs in this case, if you will. Otherwise, if you're going to San Diego Comic-Con, let us know, because Hasbro has announced the con-exclusive Dr. Aphra BT-1 and 000 figures, and you will only be able to get that set at San Diego Comic-Con. Now, of course, if you're not going to San Diego Comic-Con, you can check HasbroToyShop.com, I think probably the day after San Diego Comic-Con ends, and they might have some limited stock up there to get, but otherwise, just be prepared to probably pay some seriously overinflated prices on eBay if you want this.
Well, if you think about it, it's probably only going to cost the same as that trip to Comic-Con would have cost you. So,
that's true. Now, of course, Dr. Aphra is still getting her own Black Series figure, not the 6-inch version, mind you, but and that is coming later this year. So, but still, it'd be kind of cool to be able to get this set. And if you're going, let us know. So, because we would like to get this.
We'd like to know who among us is insane as well. So
exactly. And, I've been to Comic-Con a couple of times. It's a lot of fun, but it is it can take a lot out of you. So, and last but not least, if you are in London, England, not Ontario, Kieran Gillen is hosting a signing of, or it's not hosting, but Forgotten Planet. Good Lord. One of the comic stores in London is hosting a signing featuring Kieran Gillen, and he's going to be signing Star Wars number 50 on July 5. So if you're going to be in London that day, check it out.
Congrats for getting through that sentence, Matt.
It was tough. It was hard. Grammar is hard. English is hard. So.
Yes, it is.
And that's all the news we've got for now. I'm sure something will happen between now and the time we post this, so. Shall we dive in?
Yes, let's. Let's. You want to begin with Thrawn number 5. This would be the penultimate issue in the adaptation of the novel by Timothy Zahn.
It would be. It would be. Or excuse me, let me get into the voice. Yes, it would be. Issue 5. Writer Jody Hauser. Artist Luke Ross. Colorist Nolan Woodard. Letterer VC's Clayton Coles. Cover artists Paul Renaud, Rafael Albuquerque, and Laura Martin. Production design Anthony Gambino. Assistant editor Tom Groneman. Editors Heather Antos and Mark Benicia. How's that?
That has to be the last time you use that voice, or we're going to have to give the show the explicit tag.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Of course,
it was an extremely good approximation of Thrawn's voice. So,
well, I do appreciate it. Well, issue 5 gets us. We've got Thrawn and of course Eli Vanto. They are making their way deeper into the investigation of the criminal that we know only to be Night Swan. Of course, he is. Also featuring prominently in this issue is Governor Arinda Price, who is the governor of Lothal. That may be a familiar name for a lot of you if you are an avid watcher of Star Wars Rebels. But, you know, we open up on Bataan again, and we see that, Thrawn has graduated to his Chimera Star Destroyer. He's no longer on the smaller one. Looks like Admiral Durrell's got all his ships firing now. Scrim's Island's energy shield is holding, says Thrawn. Still no response from the insurgents on Bataan. That will soon change. So
now here's something that would have been a nice reminder. I had forgotten that they weren't supposed to be there. That's not where they were sent.
No, they were not supposed to be there. He is,
They're hiding in plain sight here.
They are. I mean, he is, and there it looks like they're on that old freighter, the one that looks like the one that Dash Rendar used to use.
Yes.
And probably still does use somewhere, wherever Dash Rendar may be. So, because, Thrawn is pretty convinced that Admiral Durrell, Durrell talks a good game. He's a lot of bluster, but he doesn't play a good game. And it looks like that's exactly what's happening here, because as they're watching the Star Destroyer Judicator, is open fire upon and takes a direct hit. And now there's nothing that they can do.
There is indeed nothing that they can do. And so they're pretending to be smugglers. It took me a little bit because I didn't go back and reread the last issue. And so it took me a little bit to remember all of this. So I would have appreciated a little bit of a... You know, I always talk about how they're usually pretty good about bringing us up to speed on what's going on, and this time we're just sort of thrown directly into the action. So, I had a little bit of trouble with it. I'll be honest with you, brain.
There was a bit of stumbling. I think that's a fair assessment because, this is where the story in the Timothy Zahn novel really starts to get, for lack of a better term, complex because you got a lot of threads that are in the process of being woven together for sort of that big final tapestry as you approach the end of the novel. And in the comics, you've basically essentially a month gap between issue. And it would have been nice to have had like they used to do in the old comics. Well, not in the old comics, but, last issue, just a quick, two or three sentence summary of where we are.
It's where we miss the crawl that we have in the main books.
Yeah, very much so.
But they find there's an unidentified freighter that's trying to slip by undetected, mm-hmm. Which I think is great. It's a great idea to try to slip out in the middle of a battle. And so they basically start tracking it, and they contact the freighter, and they figure out that this freighter is going to meet Night Swan.
Uh-huh.
And I like that he has, Thrawn has Voss basically pretend to be a smuggler, but he isn't until he... I like the way they play it. He's not... Until they're sure... If they want a buyer or a seller, he doesn't commit one way or the other. And so they jump to meet their contact, which we assume is Night Swan.
Well, yeah, definitely. So,
and he puts Vanto into one of his old uniforms. And I love the topics about the blaster burn. He says, well, you took this tunic from an officer you killed. You wear it because it intimidates people. And he's modified the remote on his old plaque, lieutenant's plaque, the top left, you hit it when the time comes. He says, that time being, he says, you'll know. And he says, where will you be? And Thrawn says, engineering our escape. In the meantime, learn as much about them as you can. And exactly. So he's given them the name Horatio Fig, which is, that's a great name.
I like that. It's almost like a Dickensian name in a sense.
Yes.
So.
And so they bring him on board, and he figures out that Night Swan is Signy. And remind us who this guy is, because I was having a little trouble remembering, as I was having trouble remembering everything related to this book when I started.
Signy. Ah, well, this goes back for a while. As they say, from the Tabana gas encounter. Remember, like it was what was in the first or second issue,
something like that. Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, remember when he and Thrawn were still underlings, if you will, and they encountered the pirates, and the pirates were stealing the Tabana gas.
Yes,
this is Signy.
Okay, that's like I said. I just in case anyone else was having trouble keeping up the way I was.
That's okay.
And so he is Night Swan, which is of course a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was not seen, and of course, I think Signy handles this pretty well, Night Swan. But I think Eli Vanto also handles this pretty well, because this is where everything could have just gone pear shaped. But Signy, he seems to fall for it, because I like this line he says, Vanto. I'm glad that Admiral Thrawn sent you to seek me out. I always thought you'd been dealt a bad set of cards. Your presence here means you'll be spared what the rebels on Batone are doing to him right now.
So yeah, he thinks he's still back there.
Yes,
for some reason.
And I think he gets the impression that Eli is he's been fed, because he doesn't realize that Eli has finally been promoted, after years of languishing. And I think that he's kind of sees Eli as perhaps maybe wanting to not so much defect, but play both sides and start looking out for himself. So and of course the dialogue here, especially the thought bubbles from Eli, really help. It kind of guides the narrative along. Does he think Thrawn is directing that botched attack against the Batan insurgents? So, and then,
this conversation, and through this conversation, Night Swan realizes Thrawn is this non-human from the unknown regions that he's heard about.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, wait, Hell and Brimstone, that was him? Heard about it a couple of years ago from someone working through asteroid somewhere.
Yeah, an unknown non-human, blue skin, red eyes, who teamed up with a Jedi general during the Clone Wars.
Anakin Skywalker. And of course, they're going to give us all of this backstory.
Of course.
But not the stuff that we need to know what's going on right now. And he goes, so you do know the story? He goes, yeah. And then they figure out that they've boarded the Slipknot, which is the ship that they came in on, that mm-hmm. Vanto and Thrawn came in on, and they've not found anyone on board. And Night Swan just tells him, look, nothing to worry about here. And he says, do you really think you have any friends on Coruscant? And right as he says that, Eli knows something's about to go down. And there's a big alarm. And Eli knows that that's his signal to. I'm always afraid when somebody tells me you'll know the right time, I'm going to pick the wrong time. But Eli picks the right time to hit the button. And there's an explosion. He gets away. Thrawn steals another ship that they have on board. They get away. And again, I'm just kind of
The one thing I want to talk about here. I want to talk about something about this narrative. This one page. Let me go, because I'm on digital today. Digital page 10. I like the explosion goes off. And then the paneling here, I think, is really interesting. It's very jagged and very uneven. In a very good way, because it basically shows Eli's an effort to get out, to get to Thrawn. And I like how basically in that big middle panel, we see him take down, struggle with one of the pirates or rebels or whatever. And it looks like it's almost like three different people going at it with three different other people. But it's still just him, and it's just giving us the narrative of how he is. He encounters the guy with a gun, he knocks him down, then he's got him down, then he takes the gun and cold cocks him. I think he does more than cold cock him. I think he kills him.
It looks like it to me, yeah.
And then, of course, we get that inset where the guy is behind him on the floor, splayed out. Then we see him looking into the cargo bay, and then we see, I love this very small version of Thrawn in the lower right-hand corner. This way!
Yes.
To me, that was a lot of good energy. I really like the way that worked.
It was. It was very good storytelling, because it tells you exactly what happened in the order that it happened. And it was, it was really, really nice. I really liked that. And so, again, from this point on, they steal a ship, they get away, and Thrawn has to meet with the other admirals. And this is where I realized, he's not where he's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because they talk yes. about they talk about their plans, about what they're supposed to do, about in each spot, and they get to Thrawn, and he says, "Samlan is likewise pacified. Two enemy ships were destroyed. Four ships captured." And the Grand Admiral says, "Without your actual presence, I'm told."
And says, I like
the
this.
Action was carried out under my direction. At my direction, Admiral. I see. You, what were you gonna say?
No, I just I like that, you know, Thrawn just does not lose his cool at
not
all,
at all
ever.
And I like the way that they've drawn the holograms here. It seems like that would be something that would be a little tricky to color and make it look right, and I think they've done a very good job with this.
They have done a superb job with this. I mean, this Luke Ross art has been quite enjoyable. And of course, we're not surprised by that given his work on the last Thrawn miniseries. But yeah, like Nolan Woodard's colors here, they're just out of sight.
They really are. And so he impresses Thrawn, manages to impress the Admiral. And he says, you know, ask him how much time you said you needed to gather intelligence at the baton of the on the baton insurgents. How much time will you need? And he goes, actually, Fleet Admiral, the gathering is complete. I can eliminate them whenever you wish. And so then we cut to several days later, and Thrawn and Voss are meeting with Admiral, or I guess he's Colonel Yularen at this point, and Arenda Price. We do remember them.
Obviously. Oh, very much so. We can't forget them. And of course, for anyone who's wondering, wait, why is Yularen now a colonel? He's no longer, you know, in the Republic Navy, but in the Imperial Security Bureau. So
right. And so they're talking, and they Arenda Price. They find out that her parents are actually on Baton with the insurgents, but she doesn't know if they're actually with the insurgents. And so because she says two of the civilians are my parents, so she wants to go down and try to find the information that they need. And they work it out. She's going to go. And she insists that her parents are loyal to the Empire. And Thrawn says, perhaps Night Swan is quite persuasive. And even with an ISB escort, this will be a dangerous undertaking. She says, I'll be fine. And you need the intel. So they decide to let her go. And then Yularen has a moment with
Eli.
And this is interesting because he's basically telling Eli, look, be careful. I think Thrawn's about to mess up. He doesn't understand what Thrawn is doing and, as always, is underestimating him.
Well, that's true. But the thing, you know, at that time, I think it's because Yularen does not realize that Thrawn has probably already calculated about 57 different scenarios.
Exactly.
For how this could unfold. And, you know, Yularen, he's looking at it two ways. One, it's a success. One, it's an abject failure.
Right.
So exactly. And I think he's trying to make sure that everything is perhaps cushioned is a poor choice of word, but he's just getting prepared in case it does, you know, go haywire. So.
And so page 17 has me a little disoriented. This panel with Thrawn and Night Swan back to back. Has that happened yet? Did that happen when we were, you know, the panel I'm talking about?
Yeah, the one where
they're about to duel.
I don't think so. No.
Okay. Well, that's why I was confused. I couldn't figure out if that was supposed to be foreshadowing or if that was just sort of artistic license. If that was somebody imagining that this is what happens. It confused me.
Yeah, it does seem. But you know, it stylistically, it's very pretty.
It is. It's very very nice. I love the art on it. I just didn't understand from a storytelling perspective.
I think the way they faded the panel like that, it's just adding to the context of, you know, of what he's saying here. You know, I've had the feeling ever since the first Abana Gas encounter that the man's gotten under Thrawn's skin. Deeper, probably, than the Admiral would admit. With him orchestrating this whole thing, I'm not sure how clearly Thrawn's thinking. So, I think by doing, you know, setting it up like
okay,
a sort of, you know, duel at noon, if you will, or a duel, you know, duel at dawn. So they're just, you know, they're just kind of impressing upon us, you know, the fact that these two are very much adversarial in nature.
I prefer duels at noon, by the way.
Well, it's, you know, well, you've had breakfast and you've got a little more energy.
And then Voss, you know, assures him, Yularen says he's thinking just fine and whatever he does, it'll be for the good of the Empire. I hope so. Keep an eye on him anyway. Everything okay there?
Everything is fine. I was trying to mute my phone because I have 18 people literally at once texting me about weird stuff. So... I'm just trying to mute the phone. Apologize for that.
Always when I'm eating, as Barf says.
No, it's, well, you know, not to go on a tangent here, but like, you know, I will go hours without a single text, and then I will get one text, and then in the space of 5 minutes, I actually, in one instance, I counted, I got 27 texts from 27 different people.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just at that point, I just turned the phone off and put it in the glove compartment or something. So.
So from here, we cut to on Creek Path down on Bataan at Arenda's parents' house.
Yes.
Really like their sofas, by the way.
It's a nice and comfy
the decor
looking.
The decor is nice. So she's there with Matai, and they're telling their parents that they're looking for a friend of his who is inside. And this whole story, she's wearing a wig with I guess colored contacts or something.
Yeah, the full thing. So she's going all in.
And so they talk their parents into helping them find the person that they're allegedly looking for. And I'd forgotten about this in the book. So. They leave her mother behind, but her dad and her friend Matai go walking toward where they think they're going to find the person. She hangs back. She calls her dad, but impersonates her mother. And I'd forgotten in the book that she does that.
Yes, yes.
And it's not set up anywhere before then in the comic, at least, that she has that ability.
Well, yeah, it's not, but I think it's also implied. I mean, because, you know, she can probably, you know, she's like mother, like daughter in this case.
Right. You would imagine it wouldn't be a big thing. So they call each other back, or they call her mother back, and her mother calls them back, I should say, and she and her dad go back and leave their friend Matai there to go in and find whoever he's looking for. Well, of course, they come back, and she has to admit to both of them, yeah, I impersonated mom, and she wants him to leave. And they finally agree, and she says, her mother says, what about our friends? What about the men and women we work with in the mine? And she says, I'm not here for them. I'm here for you. And then from here, we get a nice transition, because we have a bubble from the next page. That this is Admiral Thrawn aboard the Chimera. I wish to speak to Matt Swan.
Love this, too.
Excuse me? Sitting this is Admiral Thrawn. Please inform Knight Swan that I wish to speak to him. He's just sitting there among his artifacts. And I love the way he's drawn here, the shadows around his eyes where they just pop, and he says, I wish to speak to you face to face with no barriers between us. To be continued. And so maybe Yularen is correct. I don't know.
We'll see. We'll find out.
This issue, though, I don't really feel like it advanced the story very much. And we have one more issue, and I'm not sure how I feel about this adaptation. At this point, I don't feel like, as a comic book, it's given me a really satisfying story. If I was just reading it as a comic and not as an adaptation of a longer work, I don't know that I would be satisfied with the storytelling. What about you?
Well, I find that there are elements of it that, you know, it's done well, but it's not really brought a whole lot new to the game here. And because of the simple fact that it is adapting the novel, I'm wondering if perhaps this should have actually maybe been a 12-issue maxi series, because that would have enabled the creative team to get more of the detail in there.
Agreed.
You know, case in point, you know, with, you know, like her a little more deeper look into her relationship with her parents. You know, I mean, we know from reading the novel that Arenda's mother is very, very much a people person and very concerned about others, which is, you know, but, you know, you'd only know that if you'd read the novel, you know, as, you know, and then wondering, well, why is she expressing such concern? You know, her daughter has come to save her and her father, yet she's like, well, what about our friends? No, I'm here for you. So, but, you know, so it's nice. You know, I do enjoy reading it, but I don't think, you know, I feel for people perhaps who have not read the novel. They're reading this and they are going to find it a little disjointed.
Exactly, and that's kind of where I'm coming from with that. If it, you know, if it's supposed to be a compliment to the novel, fine. If it's a replacement for the novel, I think it fails. And even as an adaptation, so far, again, I'm withholding final judgment until we get the last issue. But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, but you know what has not been disappointing is the volume 2 of Darth Vader, and issue number 17 continues this excellence. This was a great book, a great story, a great way to end this story arc. It's part 5 of Burning Seas. And this, you know, whereas Star Wars was showing us the mutiny at Mon Cala, Darth Vader has been showing us the subjugation of Mon Cala. And, of course, written by Charles Soule with layouts by Giuseppe Camuncoli. Danielle Orlandini finishes. David Curiel colors. The cover, of course, was by Camuncoli with Ilya Bonetti. Letters by VC's Joe Caramagna. Editors, Heather Antos and Tom Groneman. And the editor's editors were Jordan D. White with Mark Benicia. And, you know, we're getting right to the end game here. I mean,
I do want to comment on that cover right quick. We talked about it a little bit last month. I love this cover with the rain falling down.
Oh, it's
and
a great cover.
Crashed TIE fighter as the and the light from the blades. Just beautiful.
It is, isn't it? It's very evocative. It's stunning in its presentation because you see a lot of energy here, and you can see that there's a lot of desperation and desire, as well as a sense of purpose for both Darth Vader and for Farron Barr.
Yes, absolutely. And we pick up, like you said, right where we left off with Barr saying, execute Order 66. And I love that one of the Knight sisters says, don't you dare, you stupid clones. We're Inquisitors, not... Barely get back. Kill the Jedi. And then that panel is great. With just the blaster shots and sabers going left and right. It's great.
That was really cool. That was just so awesome. And the fact that, that Farron Barr pulled that off, that was amazing. So, and of course, we also find out that there's a little more to Farron Barr than we were led to believe, or that perhaps we ourselves led ourselves to believe, because Verla says, but you are also a Jedi, and I'm with you. Once they kill the Inquisitors, won't the clones come for us? No. Remember why you sought me out, he tells her. And we get the flashback. Follow me. And I will teach you how to use this gift. Now, Verla, use everything I have taught you, and we're back in the present, and leap. And that is how they are able to escape.
But so, it's sort of noncommittal about what she sought him out for, and one assumes they sought him out for revenge.
I would think so, yes.
And that is, not a Jedi. So
that was part of his recruitment effort. And, the thing is, I don't think he was actually, he was not I think it was made clear in the previous issues, he was not a Jedi. He was merely a Padawan.
Right. So he probably wasn't even on the rolls at that point, you would assume. Mm-hmm. And so they split up. He and Verla split up. He tells her, you'll hide, wait out the battle. I have another fight ahead of me, one I intend to win. And
love the look of determination on his face there.
I do as well. And so back at the fight, 6th and 9th start running away. And Sixth Sister just chops Ninth Sister's leg off. and it says, you're dead, Sixth. This won't stop me. And then you're dead. And she says, keep the clones busy for a while, will you, Ninth Sister? Good luck. You were always my favorite. As it runs off.
Yeah, and because that's Sixth Brother. That's
Sixth Brother, not Sister. Yeah, Ninth Sister, yeah, Sixth Brother.
That's Prosit Dibs.
Yes,
our blind Jedi that we saw in the Mace Windu miniseries.
So he has really just gone full on dark side at this point.
Yes, he has. Yes, he has. So amazing, amazing.
And so we cut to elsewhere in the Royal Command bunker, and we have Lee Char's guards going up against Vader and not lasting very long at all, as you would expect. And I love in the span of two pages we have all of them striking these defiant poses where they say protect the king. You turn the page, and they're all dead. Dead and smoking, and Vader's just walking right through.
It's not pretty. It is not pretty.
And sort of Lee Char, of course, ever defiant and stands up to him. He says, even shoots at him, going so far as to shoot at him. He deflects it, shoots Lee Char's gun out of his hand. And then Vader contacts Tarkin, says, I have him. And he says, good, bring him to a window. And so I'm thinking, is he going to shoot him from space? Because Tarkin says, you may fire at will. So they start shooting, and they're blowing up the city. And I love that shot of the three Star Destroyers just shooting the green beam down. And I realize, that's why. He wants him to watch.
Yes, he wants to see what he's doing to his planet and to his people and to his cities. And goodness gracious, it is devastating. But I love this. And, all throughout it, this is immensely drawn. And it just flows so well. And there's Lee Char. You are beasts, parasites, evil. But destroy as many cities as you like. It changes nothing. I will not surrender my planet to you. The grasping tentacles of the Empire will not take up Mon Cala. Imprison me, even torture me if you like. But it does not matter. The Mon Calamari are central to the destruction of the Empire, and it will not happen without me. I know this to be true. And Vader is just, a twitch of my finger could end you forever. You are central to nothing. You do not matter. You have been lied to. And then that's where Barr comes in. And this is really good shading. No, Vader. Ignites his saber. I told him the truth. And just, you know, Vader responds as Vader would. We shall see.
And this, I love the way this is intercut, the lightsaber battle intercut with the destruction of all the cities from the Star Destroyers. Really, really great imagery.
It is. It's really amazing imagery.
Because at first you're not sure if you're looking at a lightsaber or a blast, the first boom in the middle of the page. And so down at this, we cut down to the South Pole, and Admiral Raddus is giving him a status update, and he's just saying, look, order the crews to prepare to delink the cruisers and scatter on my mark. And I love it. He says, no reason to make it easy for these devil squids. What a great word. And this is, of course, sir. And until then, and of course, he just says, we fight. And that shot of him.
Oh, that's amazing. That is so amazing. That is so amazing. And then, of course, I think, you know, we cut back to the struggle between Barr and Vader, and there's Lee Char. He's watching the devastation, and he's starting to realize that this devastation is going to be complete. You know, this, he's not, now he's kind of regretting his words, and, you know, just with that simple no. And then, of course, you know, Vader and Barr are chatting, as the Jedi often do. You know, why did you come here? Your death will achieve nothing. You know, and my death is not certain, Sith. I killed your Inquisitors. Perhaps I will kill you. And Vader's just, no, I sense something. You know you cannot defeat me, yet you came here anyway. There must be a reason. I sense pride. So... Vader's so right. This is very Sith-like of Farron Barr. You know, I should be proud, Vader. When all is said and done, I'll be the reason Palpatine's cursed empire crumbles into ash.
He's putting a lot of faith in the future and in his vision.
He is very, very much so. And you know, and of course, that's when, you know, Vader properly intuits that, oh, you assassinated the Imperial ambassador. You know, and of course, Barr comes clean. And then, of course, Lee Char is just devastated. You know, what? You put all this death, all this pain because of you? But you are a Jedi. And then that's when he Lee Char gets on the squawk box, you know. I am not under duress, and I make this order of my own free will, using command code EBVortex9. Stand down immediately. Repeat, all Mon Cala defense forces stand down. And there's Admiral Raddus. We just can't give up. And then, of course, he implores Tarkin, you know, we surrender. I'm ready to talk terms. Please just stop killing my people. And then just vintage Tarkin. Excellent, Your Majesty. I accept your surrender. I will send a shuttle to take you into custody. In the meantime, the bombardment will continue. No, please. I've given what you want. Please. And then
again, why does anybody think Tarkin is gonna play by any rules?
He's not. He's
ever.
Tarkin is all about the show of force.
And that shot of all the lasers just hitting the water.
Look at the way the water is boiling.
Yes. And it just, like I said, it just says everything about what's going on. And so the next page is where Barr looks a little crazy as he's laughing. Don't you think?
He's starting to lose it because he knows he's going to die. But he's also, that is the face of a man whose plan has been set into motion.
And again, the fact of the matter is, he's not wrong, but at the same time, damn, dude, you're causing the deaths of billions. And so Raddus says, look, order all cruisers to launch, and his assistant says, launch, but they're trading ships unarmed. If they try to run the blockade, well, he says, better than sitting here waiting to die. Some of us might make it through. We can return another day to liberate our home. Where a people of sea, space may not be so different. And so again, Barr is laughing, and Lee Char says, why are you laughing? My planet's dying. You said the Mon Calamari would save the galaxy, that you foresaw it. He goes, I did not lie to you, Your Majesty. A time will come decades from now when the ships of the Mon Calamari are at the forefront of a great rebellion, and then again decades after that.
I wonder what that means.
It was Mon Calamari ships, I think, that they were using during Force Awakens and The Last Jedi that they were flying in.
Yeah, but so hopefully
that's what he was referring to. I assume it's
hopefully that means they might be coming back in Episode 9.
I hope, but I'm not going to read too much into it at this point.
No, we'll see. We'll see. But anyway, that's just my two cents.
And he says, your people's vessels will be a symbol of freedom and defiance across the galaxy, and it all started with you, here, Your Majesty, with you. And that's when he said, but billions of people are dying. He says, billions who will inspire trillions, as was my plan. And Vader says, you know Jedi. He goes, perhaps not anymore. Makes two of us, eh? But I made my choices. I might not be a Jedi, but I still beat the Sith. And I love that he says that as all of these ships are getting just destroyed as they launch. But I love the shot of them launching from under the ocean.
It's a Pyrrhic victory at best, but I mean, you know, we know from the advantage of hindsight that it is a victory still. So
true. Very true. And so we found out that three ships got through. And we found out that they're out of range and we'll be able to destroy them before they jump to light speed. And Tarkin says, it doesn't matter. We'll find them eventually. I'm not particularly concerned about three ships. Begin powering down the orbital cannons. This is over. And I love that shot where it says, this is over. Where we have...
Yeah, look at the remains.
Yeah. And is is that one of the Inquisitors sitting there?
Looks like it.
Yeah, he's missing an arm. Yeah,
missing an arm, so...
Yeah, and of course, and then I love that next to last shot on the page of the two Quarren and
Verla
hiding out waiting. That's the seed of rebuilding.
Exactly, and rebellion. You know, and then of course there it go. Lee Char is being led away. Vader, there is no Mon Cala. Mon Cala is gone. There is only the Empire.
Chilling. Ends on such a down note as every Star Wars prequel must.
It does, it does. But then, you know, of course, we get the next issue. I think it's going to be sort of like this harkens back to earlier in the events of Mutiny on Mon Cala, where, you know, Tarkin asked Vader to do something as, you know, as a personal favor. So,
true. The only thing this cover is great, but I don't know that I like the way Vader is drawn, the way he's walking. Looks like he's about to fall over. We can talk about it next month.
We'll discuss it
next time. But what a chilling end to this series, especially after we had sort of a triumphant ending last month with the Star Wars book. And I kind of wish we had gotten this one first and that one second, because again, it kind of ends on a down note.
I like that though.
Well, I know you do, because you're I don't know what you are. You're a curmudgeon.
I'm a nihilist. So.
Phenomenal writing. Highly recommended. This ended as we all knew that it would. And this book is just firing on all cylinders and just keeps on going.
Always. Well, it's a good way to drop off. It's a good way to leave off for this week. Next week, we only have one Star Wars comic that's new. Poe Dameron number 28.
Okay. Continuing that book. So everybody go out and buy that one so they'll keep making them.
Yep, and then of course IDW is publishing Volume 3 of Star Wars Adventures. It's called Endangered, and it collects issues 6, 7, and 8.
Hooray! Looking forward to reading those all in one place.
Definitely, and you can actually listen to the last episode of Comics with Kenobi Young Padawan's edition, wherein we discussed issues 6, 7, and 8.
Hooray!
Yay!
All right, well, that will do it for this week. We'll be back next week to discuss the latest in the Poe Dameron saga. Matt, thank you for joining me this week.
Thank you for having me.
And until next time, may the Force be with you.
Execute Order 66.
Always. Yours is better. Good night, folks.
Thanks.
Good night. Comics with Kenobi's theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.
Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy. Don't want to see us running the galaxy.
Bud, stop peeing!